For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Okay, welcome back. Complementary opposites. We've been talking about values that are both correct, if you will, valuable, important, but on the surface contradictory, and therefore a challenge to understand the balance between the different sort of internal or external obligations that that we feel. But it's just, we haven't gotten together in a few weeks. So a reminder, the concept here is that life is not really that simplistic. We're searching for it to be simple, but not simplistic. So, you know, a lot of times you'll be talking to somebody and they'll say to you, but what about this value? And it's correct. It's just trumped by the value that's being expressed at that time. And in living the kind of lives that we want to live, doing the best we can, it's often making decisions between two good things. It often is between, you know, my mother needs my help and my kids need my help. That's a tough one. It depends on a lot of details, right? But those are both good decisions. So tonight we're going to talk about an individual as an individual and an individual as a member of the community. And it's not simple. In other words, it's not simple to say that a person, you know, hey, look out for number one. You gotta always watch out for yourself. It's not simple to say that. At the same time, it's not simple to say, don't worry about number one, just roll into the community. I'll come back to this, but this is expressed maybe most poignantly in that we come to shul, to daven, and during part of the davening, we're all alone. In other words, it's our Shemone Esrei, it's our Tfilas Lachash, our silent prayer. And during a part of the proceedings, what we're doing there is part of the tzibur, part of the congregation, the chazan's repetition, the Torah reading, the blessings of the Kohanim, things that can't happen without a minyan. So you see the value of the individual, or the imperative of the individual. I can't just come and you do it for me. And the imperative of the individual as part of the congregation. So we'll try to develop that idea tonight. And I'm not sure, as in other topics, that I have all the answers here. Just want to explore that idea and see how perhaps we can find a path in these two different elements. I'll start in Parshas Vayakhel, the Torah near the end of the book of Shmos, in the Torah reading a few weeks from now, third Shabbos from where we stand right now. It says as follows, and Moshe brought together all of the congregation of the children of Israel and said to them, these are the things that Hashem has commanded for you to do. These are the things that Hashem has commanded for you to do. 6 days labor shall be done, and on the seventh day it shall be for you a Shabbos of Shabbos is for God. I'm skipping a few words that basically say don't do labor. Do not burn a fire wherever you find yourself on the day of Shabbos. If we were reading this very carefully, we would see that the Torah expresses here a singular prohibition, don't do labor on Shabbos, and one particular expression of a type of labor that's prohibited. The Talmud explains why we have one come out of the whole rule. But essentially, it's expressing here, don't do labor on the seventh day, creative labor. The Yalkut Shimoni, one of the Midrashim, says that this is the only time that Moshe brought all the people together. Vayakel, on no other mitzvah does it say, before it says, and he spoke, no other mitzvah does it say, and he brought them all together. So, although by Kedoshim it says something similar anyway, but it doesn't say Vayakel, that he brought everybody together. This is the only time they all came together, that Moshe brought them all together. And that this was said on the day right after the Jewish people received the tablets for the second time, which was Yom Kippur of the first year after leaving. If you calculate, this is a whole separate conversation about how we know it's Yom Kippur, but if you calculate from the time Shavuos happened until they broke the tablets on the 17th of Tammuz, until he prayed for their recovery, until he went up for 40 more days, the secret element of Yom Kippur itself is that on the day of Yom Kippur, we got the tablets we hoped for. Now, that's a big idea. That's a huge idea because it means that on that day, it's as if nothing bad had happened. Tshuva is possible. Moshe had come down the first time to give us the tablets, and we messed it up. But it's possible to mess up and recover. Okay, that's the whole Yom Kippur. So the very first, if you will, narrative of Yom Kippur is that we finally received the luchos, the tablets that we had hoped for, and now God's presence was back. And if you close your eyes and you look at the day of the 17th of Tammuz, what it was supposed to be, and the day of Yom Kippur, that what it became, they're the same, basically the same. It's as if nothing happened. That's the power of tshuva. Huge idea. The Nesiva Shalom, the Slonim Rebbe, asks the following question. Why was this the only time Moshe brought the people together? Number one. Number two. What is going on here in that this is the first day after all the drama? After all the drama of we blew it, and then we recovered, and we got the tablets back? So what is Moshe teaching them by bringing them all together on that day after? And lastly, it says, Moshe brought them all together and said to them, these are the things that Hashem has commanded for you to do them, la'asososam, to perform them. And then commands us to do nothing. He doesn't command us to do anything. He commands us not to do labor on Shabbos. It should say, these are the things that God has commanded you not to do. Why does it say, this is what God has commanded you to do? And yet then we're commanded not to do something. There's mitzvos asay, performance, go do this. Mitzvos los asay, negatives, prohibitions, don't do. There's a report of the prohibition of labor on Shabbos after the lead-off instruction, this is what you're supposed to do. So to answer all these questions, the Nesiva Shalom says something that is central to what we're talking about tonight. And that is that every person exists as an individual, and every person exists as part of the congregation. The individual makes mistakes. The individual does averos, does transgressions, sins. It can be so bad that a person does something that he might say to himself, with the mouth that I just cursed that man, or spoke Lashon Hara, how can I now walk into Shul and say Hallel, or Shemona Esrei? With the hands that I just used to steal from that person, how can I now put on my tefillin, or light the Shabbos candles? How can I do, a person could have a feeling that I have defiled myself to the point that I have no context to try to become close again to Hashem. That's because we make mistakes, and everybody does it. Nobody, even everybody sitting in the room, everybody, we make mistakes. We do things wrong. Okay, maybe not everybody. Okay, now, we all do things wrong. We all do things wrong. But there exists a national identity that cannot be called doing something wrong. This is called the world of, this is based on the Noam Elimelech. This is called the world of Kol Yisrael. All of Israel. And I'll give you an example of this. So, men are obligated in many things that they're obligated to do every single day. Let's just take, for example, Shema, after the stars come out, and Shema again within the first three halachic hours of the day. Men are obligated in that every day. We don't always do what we're supposed to do. But Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, has not missed an assignment on that. Not once. Not once since Moshe said, Shema Yisrael, Shalom Lechem Yisrael, has Klal Yisrael missed that assignment. Not once. When we say every day, Shira Chadasha Shibruulim, they sang a new song at the sea and they said, Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Vo'ed. Every day that my grandparents were alive, Klal Yisrael was good on that appointment. Every day that your grandparents and their grandparents and their grandparents' grandparents were alive, and every day since, and every day before, no assignments missed. Klal Yisrael, as a group, is doing what Hashem wants from them. In some sense or another. The Noam Elimelech says that's why the Hasidim and the Sfardim have a custom to say, before the performance of certain mitzvos, here I am arriving to perform this mitzvah, b'shem kol Yisrael, in the name of all the Jewish people. Because in my own name, I can't offer it. In my own name, it's true. I'm doing the best I can, but sometimes you say, I'm not worthy. But b'shem kol Yisrael, as a part of the whole group, then I can access the point. Then I'm just part of the group, and the group is good. Based on this, the Nesiv HaShalom says that Moshe Rabbeinu was explaining to them how it was that they were forgiven. Because they bowed down to the golden calf, and God said he's going to destroy them all. He's going to rebuild a nation from Moshe alone. What did Moshe say to Hashem? How did Moshe convince Hashem? No, leave them. Don't kill them. This is what Moshe said to Hashem. As individuals, maybe you got to wipe them out. But there's such a thing called Kol Yisrael, Klal Yisrael, the nation, and that is impeccable. That's right. So don't wipe out the tzibur. Don't wipe out the congregation. And that's what Hashem listened to, if you will. So then when they came down, when Moshe came down to the mountain and handed them the tablets and everything was good, what was the first thing he did? He brought everybody together, the whole nation. And he said, this is what you should do. These are the things that God has commanded you to do. Then we had a question, but then he says, what not to do? Amazing chiddush, a great ingenious idea. The Shlomo Rebbe says, he wasn't saying, these are the things you shall do, don't do the labor of Shabbos. He was saying, this is what you shall do. Bring all of Klal Yisrael together. Bring everybody together on this day, because now you understand the power of the tzibur, the power of the congregation. The power of the congregation can be, even if some bow down to the golden calf, they'll be seen as individuals. Hashem will take care of his business however he will, but Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, endures. This is what you shall do when you think all the chips are down. Bring everybody together. Roll yourself into the tzibur when you think everything's wrong. You're part of the congregation. This is what you shall do. And it answers all the questions. That's why it happened that day when they came down. That's why it was the only time. It was the only time necessary to say to them, this is what you have to do. And that's what it means, this is what you shall do. Don't do labor. No, this is what you shall do. Bring everybody together. Power of the tzibur. Moshe himself understood that as an individual, you're limited. As a member of the congregation, that's when you really shine. So when we first meet Moshe, not as the baby, but as an adult, Moshe is in Paro's house, and it's time for him to leave Paro's house. And this is what it says in the Torah. The immediate previous verse says, she named him Moshe because he was drawn from the water. The very next verse says as follows. So we're dealing with a baby in the thing, in the ark, if you will, the small ark, or basket, or whatever you'll call it. I like the word ark because it says in the Pasuk, Teva. It's also called a Teva, same idea. Okay? The next verse says, Vayehi bayamim ha'hem. And it was in those days, Vayigdal Moshe, and Moshe grew up, Vayetse el achav, Vayar besiv losam. He went out to his brothers, and he saw in their pain. And then it tells us, Vayar ish mitri makei ish ivri me'achav. He saw an Egyptian man, hitting one of his Jewish brothers. The Shara Yosher describes in the preface of the Shara Yosher that this phrase, and Moshe grew up, and he went out to his brothers and he saw in their pain, cannot be understood as simply a narrative of separate clauses. Moshe grew up, then he went out, and then he saw their pain. It's not what it means. Vayigdal Moshe, Moshe grew up, is defined by the fact that he went out to his brothers and he saw their pain. That's the definition of growing up. The definition of growing up is being broader than one's own self, even in everyday life. The greatest sign of growing up is merging your life with another person. Then doing the insane thing of bringing into the world people who only take from you. Okay? And that's you're broadening the what was one. Now that one, it's not really two. It's one. And then it's not really two plus whatever, it's one. That's my problem, that's my glory, that's my responsibility. That's what it means, Vayigdal Moshe. Moshe grew up, Vayetze El Achav. He went out to his brothers, he saw in their pain. That's the definition of being a grown-up. And that's why you can be a grown-up when you're a child. The Gemara says in Yevamos, you can be a grown-up when you're a child, and you can be a child when you're a grown-up. Okay, because that's the picture. And everybody here knows children who are grown-ups, and grown-ups who are children. Yeah. Eddie, can you do me a favor and just knock down the air conditioning a tip there? Thanks. Okay, so now, we've made the case for the congregational personality, the not living for yourself. Let's talk about the other side. The Gemara says, I didn't look this up, I forgot where it is, maybe it's a Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara says, just as their faces are different, so are their viewpoints different. That means everybody is different. And that you're not supposed to deny that. We're not supposed to become all robots of the same. No, in fact, maybe a longer conversation for another time. We spoke about this on the Shabbos afternoon class a couple of weeks ago. That there's a very deep idea in the idea that just as their faces are different, so are their viewpoints different. Different faces is a common trait to the human race. It's not common to the animal kingdom. The animal kingdom's faces all look the same. In fact, any two giraffes who do not share the same parents look more similar to one another than my brother and I, who are identical twins. We look alike, but we don't look as alike as the two chihuahuas that are not related to one another. They're just interchangeable. That's a fascinating thing. That in Hashem's world, he made mankind, humankind, each one different to the point where there are so many variables that make two feel different that you couldn't possibly describe in clear terms what makes you two look different. Not in clear terms. You could begin eye color, hair color, height, whatever it may be. But in the nuances, we don't even have the language to describe it. Now that means that I would suggest that the reason why that's true is because the soul of human beings is different than the soul of animals. Both have the lower soul, the nefesh, but only the human being has the neshama. And it's expressed in your face, which means panim. Panim is the word for face. One of the most subtle differences in two Hebrew words. Panim, which means your face, and pnim, which means your insides. Mm-hmm. Exact opposites. Your outside and your inside. And you can almost not differentiate between the two words if you don't pronounce them correctly. Panim and pnim. It's unbelievable. Because your outside is an expression of your inside.
So every person's different. This is just axiomatic. Every person's different.
Now, I don't know if they still use this term. When I was a kid, there was a term, lifeboat ethics. Lifeboat ethics is like when you only have one water, you know, only have one seat on the boat, right? One life preserve. You know, what do you do? Who gets it? Okay? So, the Jewish viewpoint is based on a Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Gemara in Bava Metzia, on Samach Beis Amud Aleph, 62a, is discussing what to do. And it's saying, Shnayim Shahayu Mahalchim Baderach, two guys, or women, whatever, are walking on the path, Uvayad Echad Mehem Kiton Shalmayim, and one of them has a container of water. Im Shosin Shnehem, if they both drink it, from it, Mesim, they both die. Im Shosa Echad Mehem, and if one of them drinks, Magia LeYishuv, he'll have enough sustenance to get to the city, to get out of the desert. Ben Petura explains, Mutav Sheyishdu Shnehem V'yamusu. It's better that both should die. Both should drink and both should die. V'al yira echad mehem b'misaso shel chaveru. And one should not see the death of his brother, of his friend. Ad sheba Rabbi Akiva. Until Rabbi Akiva came and said, v'limed and taught, v'che achicha imach. The verse says, and your brother shall have the right to live with you. So that's an imperative to take care of other people. You should have the right to live with you. But listen how Rabbi Akiva learns it. Chayecha kodim l'chayei chavercha. Your life takes precedence over your friend's life. It's not a game of hot potato, where you say, here, you have the water. And now he's the owner of the water. Oh, you have the water. You have the water. No. Chayecha kodim. Your life comes first. That's the halacha. The halacha, you have one bottle of water, and both will die if they share it. So how do you decide who keeps it? Halacha is that you drink it. If it's yours, you drink it. Don't be confused. It doesn't mean you're allowed to murder. Elsewhere, the Gemara says you're not allowed to murder. You have to take the bullet. It's Gemara in Sanhedrin. Second, you have to take the bullet. But what is that? Your life comes first? No, who says your blood is redder than his? In other words, you're not allowed to pull the trigger to kill somebody else so that you live. But here, it's my water. And the principle is, your brother to live with you. You have to be alive for your brother to live with you. So you come first. Yeah, Eddie.
But if you have the life preserver, it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to, you know, whoever taps into the boat. So how would Rabbi Akiva?
I don't know.
Right, you're just fighting out of the water.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Well, yeah. That's a tough one. I'm not going to spend a lot of time in answering it. There's factors here. Okay. It's possible that the halacha is in that case, that life preserver at the moment of its need is considered a mitzia, something that they both found, and the first one to acquire it's his. It's possible. It could be that there's other factors. The Rambam in the... It's in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, maybe the fourth chapter, I don't remember now. Deals with the... all the different permutations of this question. Right? When do you do it? But the principle is Chayecha Kodmim. Your life comes first. Yes.
One of the moving stories in World War II, there was a ship that was torpedoed. They didn't have enough life preservers. And the four chaplains of different faiths gave their life preservers to the other sailors, and they all perished.
What was the underlying principle? What value were they expressing in that?
I can't tell you.
I'm not sure. They could have been expressing the fact that the mission needed the soldiers more than it needed the chaplains. They could have been expressing. I don't know. I don't know the story.
Have you heard that story?
No.
Before?
No.
Indianapolis?
Say it louder.
Indianapolis?
No.
Okay, so I don't know. All right. Their faces are different. Everybody's an individual.
Chayecha kodmim, your life comes first. So you got to be yourself. Now, what gives? Roll into the congregation? That means I'm nameless. Be an individual? How do I roll into the congregation? My Rebbe Zichrono Livracha used to say, he taught us this many times, and I think it might be the position of the Sforno in Chumash, but I'm not sure. I don't remember. I think so. That this is implicit in the blessing that that Hashem gave Avraham. Your children will be as numerous as the dust of the earth. Your children will be as numerous as the stars in the sky. Dust of the earth, worthless alone. Only strong when it's combined in sand together with other things, holds back all the waters. Stars in the sky, no ability to intertwine. Total individuals. It's a bracha to Klal Yisrael that you'll be strong as a group, and it's a bracha to Klal Yisrael that you'll shine as an individual. From the very beginning. That's the purpose of the two metaphors. So how do we intertwine these things? We'll give you a few other examples. Careful answering this question, because it's a little bit of a trick. Okay? At what age does a Jewish male reach adulthood? Bar mitzvah, 13. I argue it's 20.
I was going to say 20.
Very good. So, in other words, you're right. I argue it's 13, by the way, also. Okay?
No, it's both.
That's my point. That's the point. It's 13, required in mitzvahs, count in a minion, totally part of the tzibur. It's 20, required to wage war with Klal Yisrael, counted in the census of the Jewish people. Even responsibility for mitzvahs, punishments and results of consequences of your actions. Great is a greater and sort of you can't be punished for your transgressions before 20. So what's going on here? Is it 13 or is it 20? Maybe it's 13 for the individual personality and 20 for the congregational personality. We just learned in last week's parsha that the Jewish people were obligated to give money when we were building the Mishkan. What's your obligation? What's your obligation when you're going to build the Mishkan or you're going to support the congregation? Another trick question. One obligation is the obligation of shkalim. Each one's half shekel. It builds the hooks. It builds the... What an amazing word. What an amazing word. Do you know that the hooks in Hebrew are the vavim? Okay? Vavim. Vavehem. That's the Hebrew word for a hook. It's also what a vav looks like, and it's also what a vav does. It combines two things. What an awesome word. Okay, what an awesome word. All right, a hook looks like a vav, and a vav is a combiner. It's the word and. Okay, so now the shkalim paid for the people's shared things. You have to give a shekel. You have to give a half a shekel. Obligated. And kol nediv lev. Every person has to give according to his ability. That's going to be different. That's going to be differentiated one from the other. Congregational personality, individual personality. You have to do both. Davening, as I said before, every person really says two Shmona Esreis. You say the private Shmona Esrei, the private prayer that you say to yourself. But the Chazan is davening for you too. In fact, the Arizal says something fascinating. This might change your life and you might feel very obligated in this. The Arizal says the primary one is the Chazan's repetition. And so you have to be very careful to answer Amin. Okay? And to attend, by the way, so that you can answer Amin. That the primary tefillah is the Chazan's tefillah, not secondary.
Yes, what? It's because you have to do it with the group. You can't do it with less than 10.
Right. And but then when you do a lesson with the group,
but that's a lesson. That's why it's more important.
Right. Then you're Klal Yisrael. Then you're taking advantage of this Vayakhel thing. You're part of the whole thing. It's amazing. It's unbelievable. By the way, who can make up the 10? So it's fascinating. The derivation of the number 10 comes from the Talmud, which says that the word within is within that verse that talks about making a minyan, within. So where else do we find the word within? By the mention of the congregation of Korach, who were the rebels. Okay, that still doesn't explain why it's 10. Well, by the word, by the congregation of the rebels, it says the word Eda, congregation. And by the Meraglim, the spies, it says Eda. Okay, so that, and there were 10 spies. So from there you learn, since 10 spies moves over halachically through a mechanism called Gzera Shava to Korach, and then it moves from Korach over to Minyan, that's how you derive 10. They couldn't come up with a better way, Hashem couldn't come up with a better way of expressing 10 than Korach and the spies? That means that you could have the 9 biggest tzaddikim of the generation. It's not a minyan. 10 who come from Korach and from the spies, it's a minyan. Wow. And then they can say Baruch Hu. And then they can have Birchas Kohanim. And then they can lane. It's unbelievable. So there's a congregational personality and there's an individual personality. There are congregational obligations. And we as American Jewish communities, and in general, worldwide Jewish communities today, because there's really been in the last couple of hundred years, maybe a little bit longer, an extreme weakening of the communal personality. Extreme weakening. It used to be that the community could enforce upon people the demands of the community. Okay? And so, for example, you have to give money so other people have food for Pesach. It's not optional. And the language of the Shulchan Aruch about it is that it's not optional. You have to. Right? You the shkolim that we mentioned already from the earlier times, it's not really optional to daven with the congregation. It's not optional. Nobody would feel comfortable, like this is so anti-American what I'm about to say, because we don't believe in religious coercion. But the Torah says, shoftim v'shotrim titian lecha. You have to establish judges and officers. What's the role of the officers? The officers are the ones who say, oh, you didn't wake up yet, we're going to shul. Let's go. Okay, you didn't give ma'os chitim. Come here. You know, did you give matanos levionim? Get over here, I'm taking the money out of your pocket. Okay, it's law enforcement. Plain and simple, law enforcement. Klal Yisrael used to have law enforcement. Now it's religious coercion. Okay? I'm serious. Rabbis, by the way, used to have strength. It's very, very seldom that you can find a rabbi that has any strength in the authority of his position. He only has his little fiefdom, and then if you kick that guy out because he won't give his wife a get, chas v'shalom, then he finds somebody else that will give him an aliyah. Unless, in that one particular area, a little bit the rabbis get together with some strength. Okay? But in general, you know, you don't pay your Eruv dues, you're fine. Bye-bye. Let us know when you do. And then, you know, like, now we don't have that today. I'm not asking for it. Okay? but there are congregational obligations that each person has. Here's a really fascinating halacha. We all know that if somebody is in mourning, we shouldn't know from it. Either in Shiva or in Shloshim. That if, it's okay, if a person's in mourning, Shiva or Shloshim, and Yontif comes, that the Shiva is over. And the Shloshim is over. Okay? But what's the underpinning? Why is that? So the Gemara says, Masecht Moed Katan, Asi Esei Derabim Umevatel Esei Deyochid. The command incumbent on the congregation comes and overtakes the command incumbent on the individual. The individual is obligated in mourning, but the congregation is obligated in joy because it's Yontif. So out of the congregational obligation of joy, the individual's obligation of mourning is negated. It's over, even if it was only for 1 hour. Not that that's an easy halacha for some people to deal with when it's in their own lives. Okay?
Then why wouldn't Shabbos negate Shiva?
Because it doesn't have a din simcha. It doesn't have an obligation called joy. Right? It's a good question. So, we have a congregational, v'samachta b'chagecha, you have to rejoice in the Yom Tovim. And that overwhelms. So the congregational identity seems to be bigger. It seems to be bigger. But then what about it? Your life comes first? Chayecha kodmim. Your life comes first. I'll give you another halacha. The Gemara says in Masechet Ksubis, it's a very famous Gemara because it lets some people off the hook. The Gemara says that if you spread around your money, and if you're a wealthy person and you can give tzedakah, you spread around your money, you shouldn't give away more than one-fifth. You're supposed to give away a tenth, you shouldn't give away more than one-fifth. Okay, HaMevazvez HaYevazvez Yosar Michomesh, shouldn't give more than one-fifth. Why? Because you may come to needing if you give away too much. Okay? Very interesting halacha. Because that means you come first. By the way, the Pischei Tshuva in Yoredeya, when that halacha is brought, writes there, I forgot who he's quoting because he's in a collection of other people's opinions. He writes there that that's talking to most people. But if somebody is an Ushir Guddle, a very, very wealthy person, he can give away much more than a fifth. Right? I mean, it's ridiculous to say to somebody who has, I'm going to extravagant, insane number, $10 billion. $10 billion, you're obligated to keep $8 billion. It doesn't make any sense. Right? It just doesn't make any sense at all. I don't know what the number is that you could say, I'm never going to become needy as a result of it. Maybe $1 billion. Okay? Maybe one will work and you can give away 90% of your money. Maybe you could even give 99% of your money away if you had $10 billion. I don't know. You know, what would that leave you with, $100 million? It's all right. Nishkeferlich. So maybe, right? Usher Guttel. So it's not, it's limited. But let's go back to it as a basic halacha. The basic halacha is, don't become the pauper because you're giving to everybody. So then, chayecha kodmim, your life comes first. Right? And in general, in halacha, your life comes first. What I mean is, you're going to give away. You have family in need. You have the poor people of your city who have needs. You yourself have needs. There's a pecking order here. What is your blood redder than his? He's my dad. He's my son. He's my brother, whatever it is, you know. And then Klal Yisrael is my brother well before you get to the global, you know, giving. So, how do we synthesize these values? On the one hand, congregational. I was in a shul in Israel not so long ago. It was not a small group of people davening, like maybe 50 men, 60 men, I don't remember exactly. And the chazan, it was a weekday minyan, the chazan, I'm sure there are people who say this about me, what I'm about to say, okay? But from my perspective, the chazan took much too long in his private Shemoneh Esrei. Okay? Much too long. In other words, I know how to schlep it out. and I mean, I was done for like 4 or 5 minutes on a weekday Shemoneh Esrei, and like new, everyone's over. Let's go. So, I mentioned it to somebody who wasn't there. Yeah, when I went to Davin, man, the chazan took a long time. So he says, for some people it's a sign of immaturity. They don't understand that life is not lived like only for, as an individual. It's missing something in your congregational identity. That he used a sports analogy when I said this to him. He says, the guy thinks that life is lived playing one-on-one basketball. He doesn't grasp that he's a small forward on a team. And we as the tzibur that came together, we're a team. And he doesn't grasp that. And you find that, by the way, it is a sign of religious immaturity sometimes. That, what do you mean? I have to daven my Shemoneh Esrei. I mean, what am I supposed to do? Well, but you're the chazan. And by the way, sometimes when you're the rabbi, but you're the rabbi. So they're going to wait for you. You gotta speed it up. And maybe they do knock me and say, long Shemoneh Esrei, I don't know. But the truth is that I often will, depending on it's Saturday night, I see that we're going late, I'll either go faster or I'll motion to the chazan, go ahead without me or whatever. you're living not only as you. Just like in a family, you're living not only as you. You're in a congregation. You're living as part of the congregation. And you have to address, you have to be aware of that in everything. In everything. So how do we put it all together? I was talking to my brother about this afternoon. He said some very brilliant things. He said that we know a general principle that in creation are many of the hints of God's imagery for all of the world, for how the world's supposed to go. If you ever go back to the creation story itself, you see, you can learn a lot of things. A lot of Kabbalistic ideas are derivations of things from Gan Eden, from creation itself, Gan Eden, Adam and Chava, the Nachash, whatever it may be. So we see in creation itself that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a world that lacks uniformity. The bee is supposed to pollinate. Something else is supposed to do something else. Hashem made a world of non-conformity that is a necessary part of interdependency. You have to create the individual personality in order to be a part of the tzibur properly. It's simply said on every airplane. Said on every single airplane. Put your own mask on first before assisting others. You have to take... When is it that chayecha kodmim? When is it that your life comes first? Your life comes first when your life is at risk. When your essential life is at... You're supposed to live for others. Like Moshe. He went out and he saw his brother. That's the definition of growing up. Live for others. You live for a spouse, children, a world, a community, whatever it may be. And that's the greater the gedolim, the greater the great people, it's because they allow more and more people to rest on their shoulders. They hold up a greater and broader responsibility. And they say, you know, there's a rabbi in Queens. His name is Rabbi Elchanan Zon. Rabbi Zon is an expert, widely considered one of the experts in anything that has to do with practices revolving around death and burial. That's his expertise. He's been the head of the Queens Chevra Kadisha for decades. And then he became the head of the National Association of Chevra Kadisha. But he's really, any question you have in that area, he's the go-to guy. I was once speaking to him on a Friday, and I said to him, until what time can I call you? So he says, it was a summer Friday. He says, candlelighting is at, and I forgot what it was, 8:15. Something like that. He lives in New York. Candlelighting is at 8:15. So I said to him, but do you make early Shabbos? A lot of people make early Shabbos in the summer. You know that. Yes. You can bring in Shabbos early within a certain time frame of what's it called. So in communities where the sun sets very late in the summer, they often bring in Shabbos an hour and a half early, something like that. Okay? About an hour and a half. It can't be a little, it depends on where you are and how the sun, but it can't be much more than an hour and a half. I said, do you bring in Shabbos early, Rabbi Zon? He says, I never bring in Shabbos early. How can I bring in Shabbos early? People count on me for these types of questions. I can't be unavailable for the last hour before Shabbos. Somebody dies. What should we do? Can't be unavailable. Broad. It's awesome. I mean, it's the essence of living for the congregation. It's the essence of anybody who is considered a great rabbi. The reason is because they have a hugely broad responsibility for people. Huge. But, chayecha kodmim. You have to live for others. But you have to be alive in order to live for others. Mm-hmm. And alive could mean financially alive. Alive could mean psychologically alive. It certainly means biologically alive. Drink the water. You can't live for others unless you're alive. So essential life seems to come first. But once you have essential life, life is about being part of the congregation. That's what it means. So I want to share two more ideas. As many of you know, I had the privilege of learning in Baltimore for many years, and my Rosh Hashiva there for most of those years was Ayala's grandfather, Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg, Zichrono Livracha. Titanic great man, unbelievably great man. There were hundreds of recordings collected in the Eish HaTorah tape library. His brother was the Rosh Hashiva of Eish HaTorah, Rabbi Noah Weinberg. So the Eish HaTorah tape library had hundreds of his classes recorded. And our yeshiva in Baltimore, the Neri Yisrael tape library, had hundreds of classes of his recorded. The Eish classes were much more interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, the yeshiva ones were like the Gemara and Ksubis. The Eish ones were like questions and answers in Richmond, Virginia. Okay, that's like one of the titles. That's the best tape ever. Okay, so I believe that this question comes from questions and answers in Richmond, Virginia, from the Eish HaTorah tape library of Rav Yaakov Weinberg, roughly somewhere around 1990, because it was before I heard it, like in maybe 96. Okay, something like that. And the Rosh Hashiva was asked a great question. He was asked, I think it was on that tape, he was asked, should the American rabbis be stressing Aliyah or the development of Torah communities in America? Okay. Very good question. Should the American rabbis be stressing moving to Israel or the development of Torah communities in America? So the Rosh Hashiva had an inimitable way about him, where often he would do things like what I'm about to do, and it's hard to actually do it without impersonating him, but I'm going to withstand the temptation and not impersonate him while doing it. And his response was, I don't understand the question. I don't understand the question. He said, Aliyah from America is almost exclusively carried out by Shomer Shabbos people. Now, I don't know what the numbers are today, but historically speaking, there's not a lot of Aliyah made by the non-religious, although I think it's increased. I think it's increased in the last 20 years. I would venture a guess that although the American Jewish community is 10% Orthodox, I would venture a guess that Aliyah probably exceeds 90% Orthodox. Okay? Why in the world would you make Aliyah unless it's born out of religious passion? Nationalistic passion is very unlikely to give you enough willingness to live in a much smaller apartment and have to stand in lines to get your passport than our Meshuggah. Okay? So, it's just a reality that the overwhelming majority of people who make Aliyah are Shomer Torah Mitzvos. Frum. The Rosh Hashiva said, you know, if you want to encourage Aliyah, the only way to do it is to develop Torah communities in America. Mm-hmm. Okay? Brilliant answer. Which one? The only way to get to one is to do the other. It's not which one. I don't understand the question. That's what he said. Okay? So, it's the same thing, really. We have an obligation, every one of us, to develop our individual personality. You were given gifts that only you were given. You were given opportunities that only you were given. Every one of us. That's what can make the tzibur great. What can make the congregation realize its potential is not because everyone's a bee pollinating the flowers. It's because there's the bee, and then there's the kind of tree that's only designed in order to block the shade in the ecosystem enough that the tree under it can grow. Because it would be too much light if not for that. There's an atmosphere and a biosphere and whatever the right spheres are, whatever the terms are called, that there's an intermingling of things, that in order to make the orchestra, you have to have the different instruments. So we live for the tzibur. We have to live to be part of the congregation. And we have to do the things that identify us, as I understand that I'm playing on the team. Judaism is not an individual sport. And life is not an individual sport. It's a team sport. But the way I do that is by developing myself. The way I do it is, and every person has different, remember, their faces are different, their viewpoints are different, their souls are different. So one is interested in this area of Torah. Another one is interested in this area of mitzvos. Another one is interested in this type of chesed. Another one is interested can make this contribution. Develop it. Develop it, but in the context, develop your own essential life in the context of living for the congregation. That's the idea. And I conclude with one simple idea. The great Rabbi Shlomo Volbe, or Wolbe, spelled in English W-O-L-B-E, he wrote a book called Planting and Building. It's about education of children. The English version is called Planting and Building. He wrote it in Hebrew and then it was translated. In Planting and Building, he makes such a fascinating observation. He says, human beings, everyone recognizes that human beings are the greatest organism in the world. In the physical world, in the animal kingdom, by far the human race is the greatest. So then why is it that human beings among the mammals are born most pathetic? In other words, we're the greatest, but every animal is more self-sufficient at birth than human beings. Fascinating. The horse is much more of a horse than the baby is a woman or a man. Fascinating question. So he says that he learned from biologists with whom he spoke that human beings can be described as having experienced in vitro half of the gestation of other animals. So in other words, animals are born developed. Human beings experience only half of that development before being born. And when you think about it, and you fast forward 9 months, approximately, you have a 9-month-old, is way more reasonably self-sufficient, not self-sufficient, of course, but like mobile and whatever, like, you know, chas v'shalom, a newborn baby left unattended is sure to die within a very short period of time. But a 9-month-old maybe has some ability to survive. So Rav Volbe says that he learned from biologists that the human being is half as developed, 50% developed in vitro, 50% developed to the next point of gestation or that would be equal to those outside. And he posits that this is the idea. It's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to create people interdependent on other people. He created us to develop half alone and half thanks to mommy. Thanks to the people who will take care of me. Because you're not supposed to live alone. Life is not to be, from the very beginning of your life, you are dependent on purpose in order so that you can learn that we're all dependent on one another. And so we have this yearning to become independent. And society pushes us towards independence. And that's good. But the basic bottom line is we're here to be part of something, to live life as a team sport. And so your life comes first in that you have to survive, but your life's purpose is to be part of the congregation. And it's a tremendous zechus for you. It's a huge merit because remember what we started with. Klal Yisrael, Kol Yisrael, the group, it's perfect. When you roll into that, then you can open your mouth no matter what you did 5 minutes ago. You got to do tshuva. Okay? I'm not going to let you off the hook. But but whatever you did 5 minutes ago, you can still daven to Hashem. Whatever you did 5 minutes ago with your hands, you can still light the Shabbos candles, you can still put on the tefillin, so on and so forth. Okay. All right, we'll stop here.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.